My lovers of everything strange and fantastic, I am so thrilled to welcome you back. That's right, after far too long of a pause where life may have hit me like a sack of doorknobs, we're back! And I am beyond excited to bring you a brand new interview today with someone that I have been really excited to talk to. So, without further ado, hold on to your butts because let's get started. Hey Dorothy, you're not Kansas anymore. Just let that yellow brick road lead you to my door. Hello, everybody. Hello, my beautiful listeners. It is so wonderful to have everybody here. Welcome to this episode of Fantastically Strange. I am so beyond absolutely thrilled. I have been looking forward to this episode for a good long time. I have the amazing, astounding, and absolutely incredible
Freya Bishop here.
And, for anyone who cannot see, which would be anyone listening to the podcast, since it is for your ear holes and not necessarily your eye holes, I do want to point out first and foremost that she is wearing an incredible sweater. And it is one of the finest sweaters I have ever seen in my life. It has, and I feel the need to describe it a little bit. It has ghosts doing a spooky dance all across it. And it's pretty amazing. And yeah. And I do, you know, I would hate to let this opportunity pass to share that if anybody would like to see this fantastic sweater, you too can check out the video on the Patreon by becoming a Patreon subscriber for only $1 a month. But with that shameless plug, Freya, would you like to introduce yourself?
Absolutely. Hello, everyone. As you know, as it's been introduced, my name is Freya Bishop. I am a psychic medium. I am a death midwife. I'm a Reiki master teacher, and I'm a witch.
Yes. And one of the things I learned, I was about 5 minutes younger than I am now when I learned, you have some very interesting ancestry.
I am one of Bridget Bishop's descendants during the trials.
That is awesome. It would be remiss not to dig into that a little bit. But first and foremost, I met you when I was doing, well, a lot. I'll leave it at that. When I was doing a lot for the Witch's Fest a few weeks ago, which was an amazing event. You did a couple amazing workshops for Witch's Fest. And I was first taken by how awesome you are. But also, that was the first time I had ever learned about death midwifery. And yeah, that was one of the panels you did was kind of on the topic. And it was the first time I'd really heard about that. And for any of the listeners who are unfamiliar with it, it's, well, I was explaining this to someone else before, and they hadn't actually heard what a midwife was. So to first start off there, not that a dead midwife isn't normal. So a life midwife would be someone who helps a pregnant woman give birth to presumably a baby. And a death midwife is somebody who helps, and feel free to add on or correct me in any way that I am incorrect here, but would help somebody pass on into the next realm who is kind of at the end of their life, and also help family members and things like that, either during the process or if their loved one has just passed or things like that. Is that pretty much?
Absolutely. And we also will give methods of, you know, to cope with dying, with grieving, mourning. Mm. You know, but essentially as a death midwife, it's, we're there to help shepherd the spirit onward. So I like using the term like death shepherd, because that's essentially like what I do with my work.
I love it so much. I'm now imagining you with one of those giant shepherd crooks, except it's completely black and super gothed out. I, for one, am really into it. I guess my first question for you really is, how did you get into this incredible field?
So, like what was discussed a little bit in depth when we were doing Witches Fest, I have always had this deep connection to the dead. I was able to see them when I was a little girl, so I would speak out to them. And I remember being 10 years old, serving a Catholic mass. And it was like, I'm even going to take you there. Like, I was the one that held a crucifix, so I had to stay like at the altar, but like walking down the aisle, but I had to kind of stay in my own post. But it was just watching the funeral directors just come down the aisle, you know, in front of the casket, just walking slow. That was just a moment that just hit me in my chest. I'm like, huh, I want to do that. So a running gag with, you know, the parish that I served, because I knew all the funeral directors, I would ask them questions like, I want to do that. What are you? What do you do for a living? And one of the directors, he was actually the one to embalm my parents and my family, was just like, how old are you? Like, who are you? And but, you know, he was like, I'm a funeral director. That's, I went to school for it. I own my business. Okay, bye. And every single time I would serve a funeral, I would ask questions about like embalming and all this other stuff. So that was my passion. I wanted to be with the dead. And, you know, as I've aged and grown up and taking different courses and stuff like that, I was at a crossroads with myself, because at the time I was working as a shop girl at Hex in Salem. And I loved my job because I was able to help people, like buy magical supplies, help educate, enlighten, like all of that.
Mm.
But I was searching for something more. And one of the gods that I work with, Anubis, he was pushing me like in a direction of either going to school, back to school to be a funeral director, or there was this other thing that was kind of wafting around me about being a death midwife. So I'm like, So I looked into a couple of programs, and I spoke with the one program person that I took her program with. And I told her, this is what I'm looking for. This is, you know, can you help me? And ultimately she was like, yes, you're very interesting. I am interested in trying to mold you into to be what you need, what you want to be. And I started taking my death midwife classes, and there was just something there that it felt right. I like to describe that moment, if anyone watches Harry Potter, when he's at Ollivander's and he's, you know, trying the different wands, and they don't really fit. They're not compatible with his magic. And then he gets the one and everything aligns, and it is, that is his. And that's exactly what it felt like with becoming a death midwife. It just fit, and it felt like that was my purpose.
That's so awesome. So I remember you mentioning in one of your talks during Witches Fest that this connection to spirits in the afterlife actually goes a little bit deeper even. I guess, what's it called? The holding of the crucifix? What's that role?
Crossbearer.
That's, yeah. That is so straightforward. I guess I should have been able to guess that. I guess going into the second role of which you have in your life as a psychic medium, I remember you saying that it's something you've experienced for pretty much your entire life. Yeah.
Yeah.
I really don't know how to lead into that question other than just to say, tell me more. I guess, has it been something that you've always just experienced, or?
Yeah. I was a little girl, and I remember people would come to my room, especially at night, and I would always speak out to the people, and my parents would get really irritated because they're like, go to sleep, like, shut up, who are you talking to? Because I would just have these full-blown conversations. And it got to the point where I was questioning my family about dead relatives. Like there was one in particular, my grandparents, like their headstone had a crack in it and it was like tilted, like it was just like broken. I'm like, well, what's going on with that? How come their names aren't on the stone? And my family's like, excuse me? I'm like, no, what? They don't like that. Why is it like that? And a lot of the things that I would say would freak my family out because they're like, how would you know that? It was just something I just knew. Even with my my great-grandparents, because I'm in their home, my great-grandmother was buried in a lavender dress. So when I would talk to my mom, my grandmother, who's still alive, I would even say, oh, grandmother is buried in lavender. It's this pretty light purple. And my grandmother's like, you weren't at the service. How would you know that? It's like there are just things that I know. And the dead and I mean, we've always been very close. I would even joke, but not really joke. Like they were my friends. I would prefer to talk more with the dead than the living. And it's just, that's where I feel most comfortable. Honestly, like being in that bridge, just teetering between both realms.
Yeah. Well, I think there's something so incredibly special about that. You know, and I've read a lot of accounts where younger children will have a little bit more of that ability, and whether or not it's because they tend to be a little more open or maybe not as cynical as a lot of people are as they get older. It's really interesting to hear your own personal experiences, especially as you've gotten older and really managed to keep a hold of that. Did you notice at any point as you got older, it became a little different at all or changed, or has that always been the same for you as time has gone on?
You know, I'm trying to think of how to answer this because growing up, like, you know, even going from like teenage to college years, that was always something that I always did. I know for me, because I was constantly using that ability and just utilizing it and just practicing it or whatever you want to call it. For me, it's just so easy to just get there. Whereas most people, if they're not, it's like a muscle. If you're not using it, it kind of will weaken, if that makes any sort of sense.
Yeah.
So I never really had that problem just because I'm always here with it, using it.
Yeah. And I think that makes a lot of sense too. This past weekend, if you are listening to this when it releases, or rather when we're recording, because that's probably not going to be true by the time this actually releases. But this past weekend, as of when we are recording, I actually went and did a pilot for a paranormal show in which I did a ritual for a kind of mediumship, reaching out and extending to the spirits myself. I say very slowly because I'm not really sure how to quantify it completely, but in preparation for this, I did some research, I read some books, I took a couple online classes and all of the online spaces where people take online classes. Very official business. But what some of the stuff that I read on there and listened to was that it is, though, very much, as you said, kind of like a muscle. It's this idea of really getting into a space where you almost go into kind of a relaxed, and this is just what I heard and read from these different accounts. So I'm not necessarily asking if you don't want to review you know, or if even if it's different for you, but kind of what I had noticed from this was the guidance in terms of it being going into a more relaxed meditative space and getting yourself into there and really kind of letting go, being more mindful and really opening yourself up to listen to things that are, I guess, more, I don't even know really how to explain it, more in the ether ? But outside of yourself, right? To where you're able to kind of identify what is yourself and what is outside of yourself and parse those things out a little bit more. Mm-hmm. And which I feel like anyone who has gotten into meditation will understand that even getting to the point where you quiet your own mind is an activity and a practice in and of itself.
Mm-hmm. It is a practice. It definitely is.
Yeah. So I think that's amazing to be able to, you know, have gleaned into that and really be able to recognize kind of those the separation of self and outside knowledge, and I don't want to say voices necessarily, but spheres of influence or different things. Yeah. Like, you know what I'm trying to say? Like,
of course I do.
yeah, you know, that's so interesting. So I'm curious, when you've had experiences with things like this, what has the experience been like for you? Has it been something that you see with your eyeballs, or like you see in your headspace that you hear? What kind of senses are involved in this for you?
So for me, when I am getting ready to channel the dead, like I'll go into my state, get ready, I will first start smelling things. That's the first thing that will happen. I will start smelling. Sometimes I will also taste certain things. And then once this kicks in, then I start to see. And that's how it works. Like, there will be times where I'll smell like a cigar or flowers, a certain perfume. And then from there, it just will open and then boom, there they are. And that's how it's always been for me.
That is so cool.
Yeah, it's wild. It really is.
So yeah, getting back to death midwifery, I'm not going to be able to say that easily. I'm going to go ahead and say it now, but how has that come into play with your role as a death midwife?
Being a medium.
Yeah. I feel like those two would complement each other in a really nice way.
They do. And I can like bring up, you know, my father, for example. When my father was actively passing away, the entire family was around the bed, which was crazy. And it's like, even when working with like other clients, I can see the dead. So it's like family will come forward and surround the bedside, ready to take their loved one home. Like they'll just take them out. So it's amazing to be able to see that. A lot of times the dead will speak to me, like they're holding on because they're afraid. They want, you know, a blessing of some sort. So the dead will definitely give me clues as to how I can help, you know, my client pass away and be peaceful with dying. So it's really cool, like the amount of insight that comes with it. And that's kind of how I use it, being a medium, which is pretty cool.
That's awesome. Yeah. Well, I imagine that's got to give a lot of comfort as well to, I would imagine, both family members, but also the person who is getting close to passing themselves.
Yeah. It's a lot to like be in that space because, you know, if you have family, not dead family, but like living family gathered around as well, you know, they obviously don't know unless they can see also what's happening. So it's also providing that knowledge with the living family as well. You know, with what I do, I'm very much like in the center of the bridge because I have to connect everything together and kind of, you know, shepherd and do what I got to do. But it's pretty awesome. It really is a spectacular practice. And I love being able to help people.
As amazing and poignant and spectacular as it is, I imagine it has to be it has to be emotionally taxing as well.
Yeah.
What do you do for you, you know, to kind of help, just self-care, you know, to like help relax yourself, to help like just get yourself into a place when you're not dead midwiferying, you know, to kind of get I don't want to say get away from it necessarily, but get into a space that's rejuvenating, you know?
I will, I know because I'm presenting at WitchCon next year.
Hey.
So that'll be And that'll be one of the topics I actually cover is like, because I carry a bag with me.
Ooh.
And so it's like, I know for WitchCon, when I do it next year, it's like, I'm going to be pulling out like all the objects that I'll take and use with me as I'm working with families.
Mm.
But I'll have like salt, sea salt, because there are times where it's like, I just need to just cleanse. So it's, you know, washing my hands with the salt and just splashing the salt like on me. That's a good way to try to get that energy off.
Mm-hmm.
Then Florida water. I can never leave my house without it, because that is an instant, it gets rid of the yuck very quickly. When I'm home, I will take a sea salt bath and I will just soak in the tub for a very long time, because I have to get it off me. Like with being a death midwife, we are seen, but we shouldn't be heard. And what that means is we are that pillar of strength. So it's, if families need us for anything or they need advice, it's like, obviously we're here, but we don't want to take the focal point away from the family unless they need us to step into that role. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times when I have to, you know, I have to put aside everything to be present. Things will kind of attach. There will be a lot of heaviness. And I know, depending on like where I'm working, because both of my parents died. So when I have to help a client and my client is losing their mother or their father, that hits home significantly, because I was in that position where I was there also. Mm-hmm. So it's trying not to channel or be triggered by that. It's like, that's not my dad. Don't put yourself in that position to get emotional. So it's putting up those walls and blocking out certain things. Mm-hmm. And that's how you stay protected. It's also another self-care method to just kind of block and shield and keeping that up for as long as possible. Because when someone's dying, it's, emotions are very much running rampant, and it's normal to get carried away and swept up by that emotion, but you can't. You have to be very, I'm here, and it's tough. It's very much like a balancing act of emotion.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Especially if you tend to be someone who is leans more into empathetic territory. I cannot necessarily think of more vulnerable or emotional time for people, groups of people, where, you know, you have so many things coming to a head. You know, you don't just have the loss of somebody / the pending loss of somebody, but you have like family dynamics, you have things unsaid, you have, you know, estate matter. You know, I mean, you have so many things that just all start to clash, including different belief systems coming to play.
It's a lot. It really is.
I remember, again, during Witches Fest, you talking about a ceremony for somebody who had passed, wherein you were able to combine a couple different family belief systems who would not necessarily have meshed well together, but you being awesome and creative were able to really find a way to bring those things together. Would you feel comfortable talking about that a little bit?
Absolutely. So the client that I was working for was witchy, and upon dying, the family wanted a very Catholic ceremony, and the other side of the family, who very much knew about their beliefs, was just like, no, this is what they were. This is what they practiced. So it was tying in the aspects. Like, for example, like when you think of the goddess, you know, Mary in Christianity can be viewed as being a goddess. So it's like, okay, let's just focus on that. You know, she is the embodiment of motherhood. When you need help, you pray to Mary. Same thing can be said for witches with the goddess. So it was folding in and just kind of finding those correlations between both faiths. And it was amazing that the Catholic side of the family learned a couple of things, because originally they were like, you know, when it came to witchcraft or witches, that we were soul-sucking demon worshipers.
Good days, but
you know, not, we all have our different practices. But that wasn't what this particular client believed in. So it was trying to marry in both, and each took away different pieces. Like I know with candles, for example, you know, the witch side of the family loved burning the candles. They would set their intentions. Like they were big about that. And with the Catholics, like they saw that as being freaky. And it's like, no, you know, when you burn a candle, you set an intention, you know, because like these people, they would just have candles and they would light them. Like they were your generic, excuse the French, like, you know, stay at home wives that like to go to Bath and Body Works and do the candle sales. So they had their whole slew of candles that they would burn. It's like, okay, you have candles in your home. Like, there is nothing evil about candles because you have a collection of them. Mm-hmm. The only difference is you are putting your energy and an intention into that candle before lighting it. Mm-hmm. That's what gives it power. So eventually they learned how to do that. And now, from what I know, they're still doing that. Like, they loved that, oh, I can put, I love how I have, I legitimately have a candle here because I forgot to light it. But it's like, I can put my energy into this. And when I light it, it just sets it out into the universe. It's like, huh? So it was marrying both and trying to find a way to ultimately pay respect and honoring the memory of their loved one. Like, we were coming together for that purpose and that purpose alone. It doesn't matter what war is happening with faith, get that out. It's, we are honoring this person. And how do we do that in such a way where we can pay respect to them? Come together, like, figure it out. And they were like, okay. And it worked, which I was very surprised that it did. It was, when it, everything worked out, it was a very good feeling. It's like, yes. But that's what it is. Like, when you're planning mm-hmm. a service or anything, it's that person, you're keeping that person in mind and you're doing justice to them. And it shouldn't be about anything else.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, I would like to point out too that Bath and Body Works does have candles entitled things such as love and relaxation, you know, which to me says that if you're going to light a candle called relaxation, that inherently is as if you're putting that intention into that candle. I'm just saying.
Oh, I absolutely agree. Absolutely. Uh-huh.
Yeah. And even to that end, I'm not Catholic, you know, I was raised Christian, but not Catholic. I have been to a few different Catholic locales in which there were a lot of the candles where you can light in memory for people. And whilst take as what I say with a grain of salt, since you have more knowledge on this than I, but as I'm sure many listeners will, but when you light a candle in one of these places where there are lots of candles, I'm sure there's a name for them. The idea of, like, you're also putting intention into that as well, though. Am I correct? What is that called, though? What are these candle lands?
No, I should know that because as a kid, I would take care of that area.
Oh,
all the time. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
When I was an altar server, it wasn't my duty, but because I essentially lived in the church because I was constantly serving masses, I would do a lot with the candles. Mm-hmm. I forget what they called it. It wasn't a sanctuary. I'm going to find out and I'll eventually get back to you because now I need to know.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was the place that people would go to light for, you know, there was a person dying, dead, sick. They would just go and they would, like, pay their dollar to light that candle.
Well, and yeah, I guess to that end as well, if it's even for somebody who's sick and not already dead, I'm assuming you're lighting it so they get better and not so that they die. So there's extra intention that can go into that as well. So, I mean, all of that being said, to this idea of intentionality inherently going into this candle lighting across the, you know, whether or not you're getting a nice, delightfully scented candle from your local Home Goods or Target or insert whatever store you like to pick up your candles from, you know, or whether it's a religious spiritual practice or whatever, you know, I mean, I feel like it's something that is fairly universal, you know, I mean, candle, incense, even things like this. And I think it's awesome to have this moment where, you know, people can look above and outside of the need to be like, no, this is my way, you know, and be able to honor something
bigger than themselves.
Yeah, that is bigger than themselves. And dare I even say, go outside of themselves just to even find commonalities and even understand something beyond their own kind of scope of things.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Kudos to you again for, like, I think that is such... I am a very non-confrontational person. And I feel like that would give me a heart attack. I feel like even just thinking about that makes, like, I feel my butt clench a little bit. And, like, I feel my palpitations start.
Very stressful. There were plenty of times where I would scream. I would get very upset because it's like, it's not about you. Mm-hmm. Like, knock it off. Mm-hmm. And there would be times where I would legitimately have to, like, lay down the law with my clients. Like, get over it. Get over it. Let's get back to work. We all have a lot to learn from each other. It doesn't matter what faith mm-hmm. you practice or celebrate or whatever. It's at the end of the day, we are people and we are here to learn from each other. Mm-hmm. So let's do that. Let's enhance each other's lives and not turn it into something icky.
Yeah. And I, for my own, this is just a me question I'm sliding in there. So when you do have to lay down the law, do you giant ruler, beating stick, air horn, weasels that you just like toss into the air?
That would be great. A ruler would have been great. No, when I was dealing with that particular client's family, mm-hmm. We were over Zoom and mm-hmm. I remember just banging on my table, like with just losing it, like, knock it off! Like, what are you doing? Like, fighting, like, no!
Yeah.
Even raising my voice, that was enough for them to just be like, uh-oh. Because, you know, I'm very jovial, I'm very relaxed, mm-hmm. and for me to just, no! Like, mm-hmm. that was enough to be like, oh, we messed up. Mm-hmm. So, I've only had to do that one time, and it was with that particular family.
Mm-hmm.
That was me.
You know, I will say there is something about being, you know, the nice, the jovial, the understanding and the kind person that when you do have to lose it, people do take it more seriously. Hopefully people do take it more seriously.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Even when I taught, because I used to be a teacher, I used to teach kids. Mm. So I was always like the playmate. I was always the cool teacher. I was a music teacher. So all the kids just really, like, they loved me. They gravitated to me. And if they wouldn't listen, my kids knew I would just sit there and I would kind of do what I'm doing. I'll just close my eyes and I would just stare. And one of my students, her name was Zara, she would always say, the eye is twitching. Stop. This ray is getting upset. No. They could just see, like, I was just calm and I'm like, get ahead, keep it up. So it's funny.
That is amazing.
Yeah. My students knew we would always play, dance, sing, whatever they wanted. But if they were getting to the point where they didn't want to listen, I would just literally just get into my stance with the look and they knew, like, don't push her anymore. Don't. It's going to get bad.
Oh, see, that is a skill. That is a skill right there.
Yeah, it is. It really is.
That is amazing. I do remember the second talk you gave was about with lockdown and with having to stay at a distance from people.
Yeah. It was scary.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I imagine too, even just the fact that without being able to say this in a much more delicate way, so many more people have died.
Yeah.
Which is just really... We were talking about some other stuff before we started recording and the idea of body trauma came up. And I feel like the pandemic has been like a population trauma, like an everybody trauma in a way.
Oh yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. I'm just curious again, if you feel game for sharing, like, I guess my first question on that is how has it been different for you just being over Zoom for this?
It made things a little difficult. Not gonna lie, because mm-hmm. I like being able to, like, hold, like, I'm a very touchy feely person, so I like mm-hmm. being able to, like, touch, hold hands, like that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And with COVID being a thing, having to meet over Zoom, I mean, it just, I feel like that was just impersonal.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas it was safe to kind of meet in the confines of, like, everyone's home when we were able to gather together, I feel like it made it impersonal. So when I would have to work with families, it was always important to me to keep it as personal as possible. It's like, you know, even though we're meeting, you know, from, you know, distantly across the world, wherever we are, you know, we're still together with the same intention and here for the same person, the same thing. So let's focus on that and what we can do together during our time. Mm-hmm. And that was always something that for me made it a little bit easier, but it was a lot. It really mm-hmm. was. I know, like, even I would get phone calls, text messages, like, you know, so-and-so's dying, what do we do? And mm-hmm. it was overwhelming because so many people needed a lot of help.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like every other night, every night I was working with clients, I was working with families. It was a lot. Mm-hmm. And it's just, you know, the ability to not be able to be there when your loved one is taking their final breath. That's a traumatic thing for a lot of people because they want to be with their loved ones. Like, mm-hmm. you know, before COVID, when you thought of death, it was you had your whole family together.
Mm-hmm.
And to not have that element and essentially to have loved ones die alone, that didn't sit right with a lot of my families. That was traumatic for them.
Yeah. Well, and have to say too, thank you for cannot imagine how much more work that you ended up having to do just you know in the process of that, and how much more stress and you know how much more taking on that much is, you know, and especially when you include the I'm not sure that every death midwife is a psychic medium. I cannot necessarily say that. but the fact that you have such a strong tie to that, I can only imagine that that is so much more of an emotional toll, you know, and just taking all that on, you know, I want to give a huge thank you to you
like
all of that, that you take on for all the families and the people and stuff like
that. Thank you. It's what I love. It's my passion. It's what I do. I love being able to help families.
Do you have any direction you're planning to go from here? I know that it seems, I do have a wooden bowl here. We're going to go ahead. That's me knocking on wood here. It seems that things are starting to very steadily creep more into normalcy. So yeah, are you planning just to kind of take back on the mantle in the normal sense again, or?
I know for the rest of this year, I'll play it safe. Like mm-hmm. I'll do Zoom meetings and stuff like that. I think sometime next year, maybe in the spring, mm-hmm. start meeting with, and it all depends obviously of like what's going on right now.
Mm-hmm.
But eventually meeting back up in person with clients and mm-hmm. working with them one-on-one again.
And I guess that begs the question too, since you have been starting taking Zoom clients and things like that, do you take people at distances or do you only take local people as clients?
Distances. I do both.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. And I imagine, is that something that has always been the case, or is that something that kind of opened up because of the virtual nature of the 2020?
Honestly, it's when I was living in Salem, Massachusetts, I've had people like in Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and Delaware that I knew just from like kind of going around. Oh. And you're going back a couple years ago and they would reach out to me. So it's, I guess even then I was doing stuff, not really Zoom at the time, but like FaceTime, phone calls, and I would stay on the phone with them. But that's always been something in my practice. Like if a family needed me, no matter where they were, I was always there.
Mm-hmm.
And I would always make myself available. So it's like, to this day, it's like, if someone is seeking my help, I'm not going to turn them down. I'm here. I'm here for you.
What I'm hearing is you were doing virtual before it was cool. A virtual hipster, as it were.
And so it seems, it's like, you know, when I really sit and think, because I remember being in my apartment in Salem, and a girl reached out to me that I knew from like my childhood.
Mm.
And she was just like, I know, cause she knew I was a medium, and she's like, and she knew I was a death midwife. She's like, you know, her grandmother was dying. The doctors kept saying they didn't know how long it was going to be. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, okay. And this was over Facebook Messenger. She's like, I just don't know what to tell my family. And I'm like, called her up. I'm like, you know, just go in the hallway, have a quick conversation. And I was like asking her questions, like, how does her skin look? Mm. What's going on?
Mm-hmm.
Talk to me about her breathing, like just trying to get clues.
Mm-hmm.
And I was able to tell her, like, she has about 3 hours by what you're telling me. She probably has about 3 hours of life before she passes. I'm like, so this is what you got to do. You know, mm-hmm. find a Bible, ask for a Bible, you know, sing songs, tell stories, like whatever you need to do. You want to make this comfortable for your family.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I remember this sucked just because I had to work the next day.
Oh,
yeah. But I stayed up with her all night until her grandmother passed. And it was about within 3 hours while I was on the phone with her, her grandmother died, but she was inconsolable. So I stayed awake the whole night just to talk to her. Cause I was like, okay, I'm here.
Right. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So.
Oh my goodness. Oh, my heart.
Yeah. Yeah.
I would be remiss if I did not at least ask you a little bit about your ancestor. So for anyone who may not be aware, among the wonderful and amazing listeners, what can you tell us?
So about my Bridget, I started seeing her when I was a little girl, and I would have nightmares about this woman being hung. Mm. And this was shortly after I was speaking to the dead, like very actively as a little girl. Mm-hmm. So to have nightmares of a woman being hung, it was, no 7-year-old should be having those kind of nightmares. Like that is pretty gnarly. Yeah. that was not fun. And I remember the one night in the dream, Bridget had a bag over her head when she was kicked, and that's how she was hung. And in the dream, in that particular dream, they took off the bag so I can see her face.
Mm.
And she did not look well. Let's just put it that way.
Mm.
And the way her face looked as she was dying woke me up, and I was screaming. I was really, really scared.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And the next thing I knew, the woman was in my bedroom, and I lost it. I was so afraid. I remember my parents came in like, are you okay? And I'm like, I didn't even know what to say, because I'm seeing this woman. Mm-hmm. She's in my room. What do I do? It took time for me to calm down, but Bridget was like, do not be afraid of me. Like, mm-hmm. I am not here to hurt you. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, okay. And she was like, you know, you're going to learn in time that you and I are related. But until then, can I be your friend? And I was like, okay. And that's how, like, Bridget and I started with each other. So mm-hmm. it's like, as I aged, like, we aged together in a sense, but I was able to do some research and find out that I am one of her descendants, one of her many descendants. And
wow,
she's been with me for a very long time. We worked through a lot of trauma together, and it was a lot what she went through. I mean, she went through a lot of abuse, but mm. you know, she's a whippersnapper and she's very loved in our family.
Do you still maintain a relationship with her at this point?
Oh God, yeah. She don't leave. She don't leave.
Yeah, yeah.
So my house is her house. It's pretty much has always been that way.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I like to think of Bridget almost like being a Horcrux, because like there will be people who will say, oh, you know, I can communicate with her too. It's like, okay, you're getting the traumatic piece of her. Because there's a little piece that will exist somewhere in Salem, but I pretty much have the healed and whole piece.
If
you can understand that. But she stays here with us, and yeah, it's been through a lot together.
Wow. Yeah. That is incredible.
Yeah, there's a lot to learn when you dive into your ancestry, and mm-hmm. when you take that opportunity to learn who you are and where you come from. That in itself holds the key to so much about what you can be and just about your family. And from my experience with Bridget, I learned that like family is everything. And there are so many similarities between Bridget and myself. Like back in the day, she was a birthing midwife. So when I was pregnant last year, there were things that she knew how to help comfort me and support me. And it's funny how, okay, she gave birth to living people, and I'm helping the dying, you know, pass away. So that's one of those coming full circle things that I think is very special about her.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it is, it's almost very much like, the, I want to say the ending to a story, because it's not an end, but it is in, as that you say, coming full circle, but like leading to the next pass around in some kind of a way, you know?
Yeah.
That is so cool. And not to harp on the idea of trauma or anything, because just the word itself is so traumatic. But even like generational trauma is very real, you know, and being able to learn more about that and how that impacted your parents, your ancestors, whatever, you know, I think can be really helpful in even helping yourself.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, and even understanding your own kind of behaviors and your own kind of struggles and stuff like that as well. And I say this from my own personal experience right now with what I am working through, you know, so that may just be a me personally speaking thing, but I very much believe that that is something we all come to a head with at some point or another.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but I think there's something extremely special in being able to visit it to that degree, you know, and being able to dualistically work through that. Really cool.
It's pretty amazing. I'll say that. And it's special. Like her bond with me is very special. Like it's special.
Oh, that is so cool. So the last things I have, where can people find you if people want to know more about you, about the work you do, about just how to consensually creep on you for anything creepable that you may have?
Let's see. So I have an Instagram. It's EF_Bishop. Since we just completed a move, I'll eventually be doing like my cards of the day. So I'll be posting more on that account. Facebook, Freya Bishop. I'm really bad at responding to messages just because I am wrangling two babies essentially. Yeah.
And the house, which is like a third baby. So.
And the house, you know, my grandmother, because I'm her caretaker. So it's like, you know, usually at night, that's when I'm like going through messages and stuff. So if anyone reaches out, it may take me a day or two, but I will get back. I will read things. It just takes time.
That speaks to me. That speaks to me deeply. And that said, again, so many apologies on my behalf, beloved listeners, because I realize that there has been a little bit of a gap between the last episode and this one, because shit's been a little crazy on my end, but we're here now and that's what matters. But also, I will be posting all of the links where you too can find the amazing Freya Bishop, and that will be in the show notes. And I do have to say, it has been such an incredible and amazing thing to have you here on this episode. I have been looking forward to this ever since I moderated your workshops, and since we talked, it was something that I knew I wanted to have happen. And thank you so, so much.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you.
Surrender, Dorothy. You found some trouble here. Surrender, Dorothy.
this part I'm going to cut out. Wait, there we go. Okay.